Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to Health Freedom Now. Keeping our health freedom of choice alive is always so important. I think after we've all been locked up after COVID, some people are still recovering. They don't talk to other people, and worse, they kind of don't talk to themselves anymore. I'm not a big reader of self-help books, but I really enjoyed one that I read over the last few months. And here's a time, and we're hearing it on the news all the time, we're always blaming other people for our problems and kind of talking in the computer mode, it happened to me, as though you're this inanimate object. So how do we change that way of thinking? Well, this book I read, Dang, It Was Me All Along, has kind of stated in really easy to understand terms kind of what's bugging us. My guest today, Dr. Rita Louise, wrote that book, and she's a graduate of the Berkeley Psychic Institute, where she studied meditation and energy medicine and learned how to perform intuitive clairvoyant readings. After graduation, Dr. Louise returned to school full-time, earning a degree as a naturopath and then her Ph.D. in natural health counseling. Welcome to the show, Dr. Rita Louise.
Thanks for having me, Marilyn. I'm just so excited to visit with you and your listeners.
Well, I am excited, too. There's so much to talk about. This could be like 20 shows, but we'll try to get as much in as we can. Let me just start off. There's something that you practice, something called medical intuition, and it really intrigued me because in these days in medicine, patients are getting so distanced from their doctors with all the corporate medicine and being told which doctor to go to. I just found the whole concept of medical intuition something that people should know about. Tell me what that is.
Okay, so medical intuition is the intuitive practice of being able to assess the body on, you know, non-functional levels. So when you go to the doctor, they want a test, they do blood work or a urine test or an MRI to get some kind of result. Where a medical intuitive can just tap into your body and provide insights. And one of the things that I have found in more recent days is that you go to the doctor and they'll run a blood work or whatever, and they're like, well, you know, your blood work looks fine, and so they send you home with an antibiotic or an antidepressant because they tell you that it's all in your head. And many times it's not. Or they have to run 500 tests to get to an answer versus just going, well, this is where your symptom is, but where the real issue is over here. And what your experience symptomology is like two or three things down the road from what the real core issue is going on in the body.
I just think that's so true. I do acupuncture, and one of the big things is knowing where trigger points are, which somebody tells you there's a pain somewhere, and they're wondering, why are you pushing all the way up here, 1 foot away from where I say the pain is, but you push there, that's the trigger point, and amazingly the pain goes away. And certainly the same is with how we think of pain or think of whatever is wrong with our body. I always hate to mention the C word, COVID, but one of the good things that's come out of COVID is people are paying more attention to their immune systems and sort of how the whole body works, that each piece is connected. And it sounds sort of almost dumb to just say that, but I think we've forgotten that everything is interconnected. And I love how you're looking at that. So what would you do if somebody came in to talk to you and, you know, just said, oh, I've had this terrible neck pain for 3 years? What would you do when you're trying to uncover the source?
So one of the things that I feel blessed about is, you know, going back to school and getting my degree as a naturopath, because it gave me information. So the way that I operate, there's what I know, and then there's what your body is showing me. You know, so my doctor brain, and I joke around, there's the doctor brain, and then there's the, then there's the read of the psychic chick brain. You know, so the doctor brain goes, well, you know, you could have, you know, a subluxation in your spine. You could have, you know, a vascular issue going on, you know, and it goes through this list of what are the possibilities of what's going on. And then I'll go through and start looking at these different things that are manifesting in the physical body. And one of the things about medical intuition that conventional medicine does not offer at all is it also is able to help uncover, you know, what the mental and emotional aspects of the issue are, because 85%, if not more, of physical ailments really have a psycho-spiritual trigger that has been sitting in our body for years and years and years, left unattended, and has now broken through into the physical realm and is creating symptoms. And so in my view of the world, you know, you can address what's going on in the physical body, but unless you address the mental and emotional aspects of it, it's just going to come back.
I think what you said is so true, and for the listeners, it's not to say that things are so-called psychosomatic or that you're a hypochondriac. It's just that the mind and body are connected, and we just can't separate that out. And one of the things that is so bothersome about the practice of medicine now is instead of delving deep and going back and to history, you know, all the way as far back as somebody might remember, is like, oh, well, here, take this drug. And it's getting, I don't know, tiring and sad as a physician to see us kind of devolving into that and not really developing the patient and looking at the patient as a whole person. So,
and I agree with you on that concept. I feel like a lot of medical professionals have, and I'm going to say, lost their curiosity. You know, so somebody might present with something, but they're not interested in figuring it out. You know, I have a lot of people, it's like, well, you know, on TV, they talked about this medication, you know, so I just want that. And it's almost like going to a self-serve restaurant. You know, you're going to the doctor and you're self-serving your own wellness versus being able to rely on them to dig into what's going on and give you something real and that's useful.
So with that in mind, we're going to talk about your book that I really found interesting, and I hope people will, too, when they hear about it. And something, like I say, I'm not really into a lot of self-help books. Sometimes they don't resonate with me. But this one really did. And just even with the title, Dang, It Was Me All Along, I remember reading a book years ago called Happiness is an Inside Job, and it sort of has those same themes. So what's your general premise of the book?
That many times we don't stop and look at what's going on inside of us and make those internal changes so that we can live a happier life. We often assume that our happiness is because of the things that happen to us, because of our relationships, because of how we navigate the world around us. But real, true happiness, or, you know, I like to say at least contentment. You know, if you're content, the world is okay. Comes from inside. It's a goal. It's not just an experience. And so what the book does is it draws out our inner landscape. You know, so looking at it from a medical point of view, you know, we understand how the lungs work. We understand how the kidneys work. We understand how our intestinal tract works. And so we can make an assessment or make an adjustment, take an herb, take a supplement, take a drug, God forbid, to correct something that's going on. But no one's ever laid out our inner landscape, the landscape of our thoughts, emotions, and subsequent actions for us to go, oh, well, I do that all the time, you know, and it doesn't feel good to me when I do that. So what can I do to change that? You know, because it gets more specific about this inner landscape, but not the physical landscape. It's the unseen landscape that makes up who we are.
Well, this is very interesting, because one of the things you say right in the beginning, and I confess, I'm so bad. Well, I've improved as I've gotten older at listening to the negative things people say. And I hope that I haven't held on to the ones, you know, that you've heard from when you were in second grade when the teacher said your picture was interesting, but not necessarily said it was good, and you knew interesting was the code word for bad, and, you know, you try to forget about that and never draw something else ever in your life. But as an adult, paying attention to the bad things people say. You've done some research on about repetition. What have you found about repeating these things and about negative things and versus positive things that are said to you?
Well, I mean, So according to one research study, you know, they identified that 80%, yes, 80% of our thinking tends to be negative, which was a scary number to hear. You know, okay, it was a scary number, but kind of a validating number, because it's like, wow, if 80% of our thinking is negative, it made me not feel so bad because my thinking was negative. It's like, so we're all negative thinkers. It's like, whoa, that's pretty good in a sad way. You know, but it's the programming we receive, you know. As an adult, we are better able to navigate negative commentary. It might affect us, but we're better able to navigate it. I remember in college, I was taking this art class, and to make a very long story short, the instructor looked at me and said, well, maybe your lack of intelligence has to do with your lack of creativity.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and I just was kind of like, I dropped the class. I mean, you know, I could say some very colorful words of what I thought at that time, but I dropped the class because if that's what he thought of me, you know, and in retrospect, it's like, no, I am not, I don't lack intelligence. I've written 7 freaking books. I do all this stuff. Intelligence is not in the lacking. But, you know, so I didn't take that on. I didn't allow it to control me. But when we're young, when we're in our formative years, you know, into our teen years, those things that people say to us, we just assume are true because we don't have the experience to say, well, you know, that wasn't my experience and, you know, they're a jerk and whatever. And so we just think, oh, well, my art is interesting. you know, or I'm not very good at it. And then we base our life on it. You know, we may never pick up a pencil again. We may never play an instrument again. But in the same breath, you know, when we're talking about narcissistic individuals, you know, they're great, you know. and they live their life with this overvaluation of who they are, which may not have been true because maybe what people were saying was not necessarily true.
That's very interesting because it's so true what you say about narcissists. They don't see anything wrong about themselves. And then sometimes people who are certainly bright and clever and all these good things don't see those qualities in themselves. And you can trace that all the way back to some negative things that were said years ago that we didn't incorporate or didn't fight it in the right way. Now, you've said that when we're stressed out by that sort of stuff, we can fight back, which sounds like what you did with the college person. I mean, you kind of weren't in a position to actually confront him, but at least you dropped the glass, and or just sit there and take it. So how do we learn to fight back without, without being obnoxious or brutal or burning a bridge that you don't need to burn, but to own up to it and say, wait a minute, that's not true about me.
You know, and sometimes it's not always about fighting back, you know, especially if your natural propensity is to fight. You know, we were just talking about the narcissist, you know, their natural propensity is to fight back, to argue, to be disagreeable in order to control and manipulate, you know, and sometimes the correct thing for you to do is to say something, to fight back, to raise your concerns, you know, but other times it might be for you to just walk away because you recognize that there's not anything to fight, you know, or the fighting would be pointless. And that becomes like a situation by situation call. However, you know, I'm going to throw a little however in there. You know, if you find that anytime something irritating happens to you or upsetting happens to you, all you do is fight, or all you do is run away, you know, and walk away, then you might want to stop and take a look at that and go, but is that behavior serving my purpose? You know, like I tend to be a flight person, a flight and a freeze person. And it can take a lot of gumption to sit there and go, okay, you know, you can't run away. You need to deal with this. You need to deal with this person. You know, but it's a change in behavior that I'm not used to. Or, you know, a person that constantly uses that behavior is used to. You know, and so I sit here and talk about changing, you know, changing what's going on inside. And it's the changing the behavior that is the hardest part. You know, changing what's going on inside and changing your attitude and looking at life through a more joyful lens and more a lens of more gratitude is so much more easy than you know, for me, like confronting someone and going, yeah, I'm not really feeling that, you know, but I've gotten a lot better, I have to tell you.
It's very interesting. Carlos Castaneda, who wrote The Teachings of Don Juan, which was quite the book for everybody to read when I was in college, had said it takes just as much energy to be miserable as to be happy, so you might as well use it to be happy. But and one of the things I loved about your book is that you actually give some practical things. But before we go there, and before we have to go on a break, I'd just like to say, how is it that we get hooked on having creeps in our lives, abusive verbally, you know, if not physically, abusive people in our lives. How do we put up with that?
With a lot of patience. You know, it took me a very, very, very long time to actually recognize that it was a pattern, you know, and this was just not how life was supposed to be. And I think people get into this Ramirez, the Four Agreements talks about we will accept abuse from someone else until it crosses this line of how much we will abuse ourselves. And then we will actually register it as abuse. And so many times it's like the person who's in these toxic relationships comes from a history of abuse, you know, verbal, mental, emotional, physical, and will accept it because they're used to it and it seems normal to them. That meter within themselves.
Well, I think what you say is so true, where you don't recognize abuse as something that isn't normal. And that's the first step, is that just because you've accepted it all this time, that doesn't mean it's right. What we're going to do when we come back after the break is talk about some specifics. How do we change how we think, and what can we actually do? And you give so many of these great points in the book, and I'd like you to share some. And I certainly keep a little card of a couple of things that you said that actually affected me. So I can't wait to discuss that after the break.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org, brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Faucet running?
That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is a book every woman needs to put into their home library. Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Christiane Northrup, M.D. covers the entire range of women's health from the first menstrual period through menopause and everything in between. This fully updated version includes the very latest treatment and research data combining new technologies with natural remedies and the miraculous healing powers within the body itself. It's one of the best medical reference books on women's health, and you can get Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Christiane Northrup, M.D. at Amazon.com.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Sterling, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now's the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Before the break, I teased you all out there with going into some specifics about how we change how we think. So, Dr. Rita, get going with this. How do we begin?
You know, so, and I'm going to kind of piggyback on what we were talking about before the break about being in an abusive relationship or putting up with that kind of thing. You know, you can't change it until you become aware, like, this isn't working for me. You know, and so the same thing with changing what's going on inside. The first step, the most important step, is to start to become aware of what's going on and how you're ticking. Because, you know, I joke around, and in the book I call it the rabbit hole, but the less bad place is bad brain, you know, where you just kind of are like cranky and, you know, in negative thinking, not totally engrossed in this giant triggered episode, but somebody pisses you off, you know, and you're walking around like, you know, irritated or whatever, as the example. You know, but once you start noticing that you're in negative thinking, that's when you can start doing things. But the first step is to start noticing, because there are so many of us that just don't even acknowledge that we're in negative thinking. You know, one of the components of our inner world is our inner critic. And our inner critic is that voice inside our head that says, you can't do that. Oh, you're too fat. Oh, look at your hair. Oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we'll say some of the most hideous and awful things to ourselves that we probably would never say to someone else in public, ever. And, you know, and we just accept that. But we also, it kind of runs under the radar. It's there, you know, and it's there, but we don't go, oh, my inner critic's kind of on overdrive right now. Huh. Because once you can become aware of it, there are tools that you can employ, which I'll talk about in a second, but you can also start to become curious about, okay, so I'm having bad brain. You know, well, what happened? You know, what was the situation that led up to it? Was there a specific individual that kind of triggered this? Or, you know, what was going on so I can do some assessment about what happened? You know, because sometimes the person does something that upsets us and is not appreciated, and, you know, but sometimes they might do something that sets off one of our triggers, you know, from our programming in our childhood, et cetera, et cetera. And without the ability to kind of, without the desire, I like it this way, the desire to be curious, it can't ever change. And one of the other things that I have become aware of is, the more you become aware of something, the more you see something come up over and over and over again, the much more willing we become to go, I don't want to do this anymore, and stop it, you know? And so it's about the awareness. But once you're aware that you're in a negative place, there are some things you can do to kind of neutralize what's going on inside. You know, so one of my personal favorites, and this comes from Esther Hicks, who channels the spiritual being Abraham, is the 17-second rule. This is like my absolute favorite. So the 17-second rule is like the 5-second rule. You know, you drop a piece of food on the floor and you have 5 seconds to pick it up, or else you have to throw it away. That's the 5-second rule. The 17-second rule says, you have 17, so you have a negative thought, and you have 17 seconds to shift that thought. But then, if you don't, another 17 seconds goes by, and it becomes a little more embedded. And another 17 seconds, it becomes a little bit more embedded. You know, and then, like, after a minute, that initial thought starts to getting tentacles, you know, and it might start off with, you know, my friend didn't call me back at such and such a time like they said, into, oh, well, you know, they're always screwing me over, which might go off into some other, you know, and it takes this one thought. It can take on a life of its own. So, and it's not saying you have to catch it in that 17 seconds, you know, although that is the goal, but it's that awareness. It's like, wow, like, I know for me, I want to preface, so this book, It's not a memoir, but everything I talk about in this book are things that I did and I found very effective and changed my life. It totally changed my life. From being pretty cranky all the time and having really bad inner world to being pretty freaking happy most of the time. And when I'm not happy, you know, I have the tools now to stop and assess it and figure out what's going on, you know, and then change it if possible.
I love the 17-second rule. I think everybody out there, it can really resonate with you because, when you were talking about the friend didn't call me back when they said they would, I think about these situations and you know, you start thinking all these awful things, well, especially in the days before cell phones, it's like, well, they couldn't get to a phone or they were in the bathroom, you know, whatever it happens to be, that it's so weird of our human nature that we go to the worst rather than what the reality probably is. I think of so many things. Somebody had called me and, I said I'd be there, but then the dog started throwing up, so I had to run out and let her out, so I wasn't there at the phone. And it's like, who would be thinking, no, I'm not ignoring you. My dog just was throwing up.
And that's something that many of us do, you know, and in the book I talk about the story. You know, there is the fact you didn't call your friend back. That was the fact. You know, and your reality was the dog was throwing up and you had to take the dog outside. But your friend put this story on it. Oh, well, she doesn't like me and blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever that story was in her head. But there was no fact to it. It was like a giant science fiction narrative that she created for herself. That can make you be miserable, especially, you know, if you have a really good imagination.
Well, the worst is it then sort of sets up all these little barriers because somebody's hanging on to that story. And then sometimes even you say, oh, golly, my dog was throwing up. I'm sorry. I could. Are you making up that story?
And I have some friends that we've been working this process with each other, you know, and one of them is pretty good at telling stories, internal stories, and I'll just be like, okay, you need to stop, because I hear the story. It's like, what's the facts? What's the fact of the situation? And it always calms her down. Always.
Well, and that is such a good note for people to think about during the break. It's like, what's the fact? And then once we think about the fact, all the other stuff just becomes, like you say, a science fiction story. So after the break, there's one section of the book I really loved called Getting Over Myself. And I'd like to go through some of those questions of how we kind of not to think the world revolves around us. So we'll get into that after the break.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the internet's most beloved pets. And they all have one thing in common. Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard, that's optional. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
So what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can run, but you can't drive high. You can run, but you can't drive high.
Friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Before the break, I wanted to talk to Dr. Rita about getting over yourself. And I look at this as I think back to my mother always telling my sister and me, the world doesn't revolve around you. And there's a healthy balance. You have to love yourself, but you do have to realize that there's other people, other thoughts, and your thoughts aren't the be-all and end-all. And sometimes we have to learn how you take in all that information and how it affected you. And did you respond in a good way, in a positive way? So let's talk about how, you know, what kind of questions do you ask yourself so you can start responding to situations more positively?
You know, so I think the first note, and this really does kind of go hand in hand with some of that becoming more mindful and aware of what's going on and employing that 17-second rule. You know, but the key, to me, one of the key takeaways in this book is using your, and I'm going to say emotional space, mental emotional space, to navigate everything. I mean, literally everything. So if you have an interaction with someone or you're having to do something and all you experience is dread, or you were in a good mood and now you just talk to this person and now you feel terrible or responsible or you're taking on their work or whatever, you know, we feel that in our body, you know, or we, our brain just goes to wherever it's going to go. And when we're not in a place of wholeness, when we're not feeling good, when we're not feeling upbeat or at least content, you know, because that's kind of like the bottom of the happiness meter, then we have to stop and go, okay, well, what's taking me out of being happy? You know, because that needs to be the number one goal. It's like, what do I need to do to make me happy, you know, or to stay happy? And if you find that you're being knocked out of that place, then that's the indicator that you need to stop. You know, maybe do some journaling around it. You know, I mentioned this earlier, take in what was going on and really ask some questions about, okay, so this situation happened, and is it them? You know, is it them or is it me? And if it's them, then what do I need to do? You know, do I want to, and I'm going to say fight, kind of in air quotes, which more means, do I want to bring it up and, you know, let them know, like, you know, that really hurt my feelings, or that bothered me, or, you know, we're doing this, but it's just not working for me, kind of thing. Do we want to fight? Do we want to get away? I mean, it's okay to walk away from people if they're toxic or if they're constantly hurting your feelings. You know, there, we sit there and think, you know, well, we were friends since kindergarten, so I have this allegiance and loyalty to them, even though we're constantly having our energy be undermined when we spend time with them. You know, and maybe it's time to make that shift, you know, and, you know, reduce the amount of time you spend with them, talk to them on the phone, whatever, up to and including walking away. You know, but when we stop... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that's a really important point because, especially women, we're afraid of offending somebody. And if you kind of eliminate a negative person from your life, somebody will think, oh, that's so cruel or that's so mean. And it's interesting how you're almost criticized for doing something positive for yourself, even though that's a mean girl and everybody knows it's a mean girl. But somehow something's wrong with you because you've decided to back away from that person, that you don't need them in your life. And it's just funny how we can be so apologetic for bad behavior, and the person who calls out the bad behavior suddenly is the bad guy.
Well, and then, you know, having something happen and us being hurt, you know, or abused or whatever, and then opening the door and walking back in for more. You know, and it's kind of like crazy. You know, we sit there and we stigmatize women that are in physically abusive relationships. They're stigmatized. I mean, I think that's just a simple fact. But when we're interacting with people that devalue us or control us or manipulate us, or you know one of my personal favorites that just want to talk for hours on end about something I don't even care about, and you know, like my eyes are rolled up into my head, you know, it's like we're just opening the door to that abuse because it's not working for us. And so we just keep stepping in, and every time we step in, we're abusing ourselves. You know, we have to sit there and take ownership of what we're allowing to have happen to us.
So basically you're saying we have that choice, and we have to learn how to make
exercise
that choice.
That's right.
Well, you know, how do you teach yourself to make that choice?
Sometimes the choice can be the hardest thing you might ever do in your whole life. You know, walking away from a marriage, you know, I have clients who their families are awful. And it's like, well, maybe you just need to not interact with them, you know, and making those kind of decisions can be so hard. But usually, and I think everyone has had this experience, that when they look at the situation in hindsight, they are so glad that they had the courage to make that choice and create a different dimension in their lives. So happy. I rarely see anybody have regret about making a hard choice. Because they are choosing themselves.
I think you're so right.
Because when you keep walking back into the abuse and the crap and the bull, it's like you are choosing them. You are saying your happiness is more important to me than my happiness for myself. That's a hard one to hear, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And what's funny to me, and when you think about relationships, when a relationship goes bad, so many times, if you're really honest, and going back to what you said about looking at the facts, there was something 2 years ago that didn't seem right, but you didn't listen to that voice inside that said, something's not right here. And then
you know,
put yourself up for misery.
To what's going on inside. And I do talk about that. It's like about listening and honoring and doing something about that voice.
And I think this is something, and boy, talk about a whole nother topic than when we think about maintaining some of that intuition. I think about the Jack London book, To Build a Fire, where the dog had the instinct and intuition that he needed to build a fire, and the man was being too rational and waited too late to do so. And this is something we have to remember, our intuition and what's inside of us. And so when we come back for our last segment, I want to talk a little bit about complaining and then go on to something a little heady about our soul and what that has to do with all of this. So we'll get into that after the break.
I know you care about your right to health freedom of choice, but we are under constant attack by industry-driven medical mandates. At MAM.org, you can be part of the solution to keep your rights to health freedom. MAM stands for Millions Against Medical Mandates, and your voice is heard and counted. Visit MAM.org, where doctors, lawyers, journalists, researchers, scientists, and people like you come together to keep our health freedom strong. Together, join the millions at MAM.org. That's MAMM.org.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone?
Do flowers have best friends?
I don't know.
Hey, look.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Before the break, there's one quick thought I want to ask Dr. Rita about, and then I also want to get into really our soul and our spirit and how much that has to do with everything about our physical lives. But there's one thing you say in the book that just kind of cracks me up. Why do we complain so much?
So in Yiddish, it's called kvetching, you know, and I'm half Jewish, and so kvetching is just like a normal part of life. I mean, there's even a special word for it because they complain a lot. Okay, this is probably a bad time to say that on air with all the anti-Semitic crap on TV, but it really is true. No, just saying. you know, but sometimes people will complain, well, what has been identified, and this I found interesting, was many times we'll complain as a way to open up a conversation with a stranger. It's like, wow, you know, isn't it cold in here? Or, man, that traffic was really bad. You know, and it will start a dialogue. And it's like, huh, but it's really true. We do that. you know, and people will use it as a way of kind of controlling other people. It's like, you know, because they will complain about who you are or the job that you did, or in a triangulation method where, you know, I'm talking to you, but we're talking about, I'm complaining about this third party to make you see how terrible they are. You know, sometimes we use it to kind of get out of things. It's like, well, you know, I didn't get to the meeting on time because there was bad traffic, you know, or whatever, you know, and not really taking responsibility for what's going on with us. But we all complain, and some people complain more than others. You know, one thing I noticed early in this process was I kind of complained a lot. And I joke around in the book that some of my best stories and anecdotes that I have to share with people are me complaining about something. But they are really good. They're really neat. And funny. But it was just interesting to just raise my awareness to that behavior, because complaining leaves you in this film of negativity. You know, because you can't complain and be thankful at the same time, you know. And so when you're complaining, you are taking your thoughts and making them manifest into the physical world through that complaint.
Well, that really makes sense. And, you know, there's that old expression, misery loves company. And it is true. You do want to spill kind of the bad things. It's too bad we can't end those complaining conversations with, hey, why don't we just turn that around and let's think of something good and think of something positive that's going to come out of all this. It's always what I try to do with COVID. It's like, what's the good thing that came out of COVID? Parents saw what their kids were learning in school, you know, and on and on. And that the old make lemonade out of lemons kind of thing. And, of course, we all know people who can make lemons out of lemonade. So,
you know, and sometimes we do need to vent. You know, we think of complaining as the vehicle for venting. But many times we're not just venting. You know, we just want to tell our sad story to every freaking person on the planet that will listen to us. But in respect, it's like, so we have bad brain and we're complaining, and now we're transmitting that vibration to the other person, and depending on how they take it, it might lower their vibration and put them into a more negative place.
Well, that's exactly right.
You know, so now, you know, if I need to vent, you know, my regular peeps, you know, that we talk to each other all the time, I'll sit there and go, I really need to vent, or I really need to complain here for a minute. And so I preface it so that I can just and not feel guilty about it.
I think that's a good idea, to just say, I need to vent for a minute. And it also puts a time limit on it, that you can't drone on for an hour about whatever it was. It's like, okay.
Well, but they're also emotionally prepared to handle the energy kind of being thrown at them.
Right. And perhaps be able to help by just listening and not judging. So we have a few minutes left, and I just like to talk about that inner self. And one of the reasons I think a lot of us kind of know we aren't the center of the universe, because we do think there's a higher power up there. And to me, it doesn't matter whether it's organized religion or personal spiritual belief, but there's some sort of higher power, and it seems to live within us. What do you think? What are your ideas about that?
So I have to just share this with you. One of the things that I found so interesting in researching this book is when you start talking about higher vibrating emotions, you know, happiness, joy, enthusiasm, contentment, you know, things that are better, higher vibrating, there's nothing in the contemporary psychological model. They just say, well, you can be happy, but they don't ever tell you how you can get there. And the only places that you can find insights into how to get there is when you start looking at spiritual texts or religious texts or Eastern philosophy texts, where they talk about our connection to the divine, our connection to God, our connection to source, our connection to the universe, whatever words you want to put there. But that connection that we have all felt and all experienced, that transcends every religion on the planet, except maybe atheism. You know, that we've all had that experience, irregardless of what we happen to call it. And it's when we make that connection and we work on that relationship that the game really starts to change, you know, because if your goal is wanting to be happy, it's also about establishing a relationship with that higher power so that you can have more of it in your life.
I just think that's so true, and it's just something to think about. And like I say, it doesn't have to be organized religion, but kind of sit there. Sometimes when I can't sleep at night, I'll just think, where did the universe come from?
and you start thinking about this, and it really does fill you with something, and it's hard to put your finger on what it is. Certainly lets you know you have a soul. Well, Dr. Rita Louise, this has been wonderful. And how can people find you, find your book, and anything else you want to tell me in this last year?
You know, so the book we were talking about, Dang, It Was Me All Along, is available on Amazon, all those local bookstores, as well as all my other 6 books are available there, as well as my website, which is soulhealer.com, S-O-U-L-H-E-A-L-E-R.com, soulhealer.com. Now, if you do purchase a book from me and my website, they do come automatically autographed, which you will never get from Amazon. But my website is loaded with articles and information and insights, and it really is a fun place to be. But one last thing that I would like to share is on Thursday nights, I do a live stream. It's called Thursday Night Live with Dr. Rita Louise. And you get to hang out with me, and I cover a topic every week. Like last week was gaslighting and cognitive dissonance, and the week before it was fear. And after about 15 minutes, I open up the chat lines, and you can get a free on-air psychic reading from me. Bam, just like that. And
so
the easiest place for people to access that information is by going to YouTube and looking up Just Energy Radio. So that's 3 words, Just Energy Radio. Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central, and clicking on the live link. You know, obviously you can subscribe to my channel while you're there, and join the fun, because through that link you'll be able to interact in the chat and hang out with me and the other listeners and have conversations and again, get a free on-air psychic reading from me.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for that information. I'm sure people will listen in. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening to the show today. And remember, as Dr. Albert Schweitzer says, each patient carries his own doctor inside of him. We are at our best when we give that doctor who resides in us a chance to work. Thanks again for listening.